When it comes to entertainment and its potential influence on our kids, it seems like these days we might accidentally distill it down to one word, screen time. And while that issue is definitely, well, an issue and one that we talk about a lot, the reality is that different forms of entertainment function in different ways. Hey everyone, Adam Holtz here, your host of The Plugged In Show, focused on the family's weekly conversation about entertainment, pop culture, and technology. Thanks for joining us today. We are glad that you're here. Well, as parents, we would do well to be engaged when it comes to how our kids are interacting. And, you know, I'm talking about phones, but also the entertainment that they engage. Maybe that's on their phone, maybe that's through the television screen or some other screen. But the reality is that entertainment media comes in a lot of different varieties. So today in our first segment, we're going to dig into the question of how different kinds of entertainment pursuits, you know, from movies to TV, music, video games, YouTube, even books, short-form videos, might actually shape our kids in ways that aren't as similar as we might think. And it's a topic we explore in depth in our new plugged-in book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. And I'll have a little bit more to say about that later on in our conversation. And in our second segment, I'm going to be talking with Rebecca St. James. And depending on how old you are, you might remember her from her singing career in the 1990s. Or maybe you know her from her current co-host role with Dr. Danny Huerta on the Focus on the Family podcast, Practice Makes Parent. We're going to talk about how celebrity culture influences girls, especially, and we'll also talk about the upcoming feature film about her family, the Smallbone family, Unsung Hero. So with no further ado, on with the show. Joining me today are Kristen Smith, Bob Hoos, and Jonathan McKee. Hey, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, before we jump fully into our first segment this week, I often like to ask you all a question related to it. And this week's is a pretty easy but interesting one in my estimable estimation. See what I did there? As you think back to your childhood and your adolescence, what kinds of entertainment would you say influenced you the most deeply and why? Who wants to go first? Kristen?
Sure. Okay. This is a fun one. And I don't feel stressed answering it. So
okay,
that's good.
Yeah. I try not to stress you out this early in our conversation.
I think books are my top. I read so much as a teenager. I mean, I still read all the time, but
good for
that's
you.
My absolute favorite. And then a close second would be music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Hoos.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, you know, I was thinking when you were asking this question, I thought, you know, back when I was a kid, cave drawings were a big thing, but
you had to go like find the chalk.
That's right. That's right.
And your mom would be like, no, not the blue chalk, little Bobby. I need the black chalk for our cave drawings.
Look out for the dinosaurs.
But it really was a very different era when I was a kid. You know, I liked video games, but video games were just really getting going. They were just starting.
Like it was, 2 pixels.
Yeah, just little tiny things, you know, no big deal. And I liked movies, but my family were poor and we never went to movies. So TV was the medium that really influenced me the most. But here's the thing. There were only 3 networks, ABC, NBC, CBS.
Right.
And so
the way God intended.
Yeah.
Right?
So there were only 3 shows at any given time that you could actually watch. And in a way, that narrow field actually forced them to be more creative, in my opinion.
Okay.
Because, you know, like today, you've got 1,000 different options.
Yeah.
And so nobody's thinking about getting a huge share of stuff. But back then, they wanted as big a share as they could. So they were trying to come up with these creative ideas that they could also then draw in as many people as possible. And ultimately, what that meant was that these shows were family friendly.
Yeah.
And that was a very interesting aspect of when I think back about the shows from back then. Those shows, because they sort of informed my family ethic.
Yeah.
And so as an adult now, I there's so many of those elements that I sort of lean on, even some of my conservative values that came from the fact that I didn't have as many things to choose from.
Oh, that's cool.
That's so interesting. I want to ask a follow-up question. We don't usually do like full-blown conversations on my icebreaker question, but people may not know that prior to your stint at Plugged In, you you were a stage performer, and yes. you were part of a comedy troupe, Custer
Can't
and Hoos.
Can't you tell in his voice?
Yes, he's got the best voice of anybody on our team, bar none. I am curious.
I don't know, Adam. I like your mellifluous tones. I do.
Okay, fair enough. I will accept the compliment. So my question is, do you think that your engagement with TV somehow shaped or inspired or otherwise influenced your getting into showbiz? You know, maybe on a fairly, you know, low level, but, yeah, but that's what you did. You were a performer.
That's right. That's right. And it certainly wasn't Hollywood level at all.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to like demean your contribution.
No, not at all. You know, yes, I think the whole aspect of having limited options, you know, and you were looking at how they fit in your life and how they informed the things that were around you. And entertainment was very much, I think, for me, inspired me to get involved in it. And then finding something at school that I could plug into. And that's where it began. Finding things where, because I like to sing as well. And so
I wondered. I was going to ask you that.
And so I could find both of those on stage. And it sort of grew from there. But it began with that finding that interest in turning on a really good TV show.
Yeah. Can we just ask whose questions the whole podcast?
Right.
I just want to like listen to your life story. Tell me more.
Well, we'll have to do that maybe on a future episode.
On a future
we'll
one,
do
yeah.
the
right.
life of Bob.
That'd
we'll
be
out,
so
we'll
fun.
Out the old guy and ask him questions.
Bob, did you know the Beatles personally? Well, Mr. McKee, what do you have for us today?
Well, I just want to let Bob know that I had four channels growing up.
Ooh.
Four.
Because we had PBS
so that's
also.
One UA, more oh, yeah. than you.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Interesting as you're talking about that nostalgically thinking, you know, it's interesting. It depends really, Adam, on how you word the question. Because if you're saying what influenced us most deeply, you know, it's like some of us kind of think, well, what, you know, influenced us negatively. It's interesting as I think about those things. I think the thing that influenced me the most though was music, the stuff that I was playing over and over and over, and especially in my latter years in high school was the late 80s, and gangster rap was just starting to emerge. It was kind of probably like a kid today encountering Game of Thrones, like, oh man, I know I shouldn't be watching this. There's so much content, but it's done so well.
But those
and
dragons.
That was, that's what it was like. These incredibly talented guys putting these beats together. And I just started listening to it. And I noticed kind of my language start to change, my attitude start to change. So I'm going to have to say music for sure.
Guys, this is so fun. I remember the first time, I'm done, Adam. I know you have to say, I want to hear yours. But
right, because we haven't even started our main conversation yet. Although I think we have, actually.
Yeah. When I got an iPod, my first, I remember this thing was like my whole world.
Yeah.
And it was either that or the books that I got lost in. But just the accessibility to that much music was life-changing.
Well, you will be amused to know that in 2005, right after we got married, we bought one of the first video iPods.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought the Apple speaker system that it sits in.
Oh, yeah.
And
I forgot about that.
We still use it to this day. If you came over to our house, you'd be like,
that's kind of fun.
Oh, it's so cute. You're still using your iPod. So it was music for me as well. And I've talked about that a lot on the show over the years. But I mean, some of my very first memories are musical memories. My dad was a huge Beach Boys fan. He was a huge Neil Diamond fan. And then I had cousins, right? There's always a relational connection. Well, there's often a relational connection somewhere. And they listened to Kiss. So I got, you know, Kiss Destroyer in 1976 when I was 6 years old. And they listened to C.W. McCall. And so I had a Convoy, you know, a 45. And you have to be a certain age to even know
what that is.
What a 45 is.
I don't even know what you're talking
a record. About. It's a single.
Okay.
Exactly.
You don't really know what
no,
a 45
I'm
is?
No, I'm dead serious. I don't know what that is.
Oh, you're so young. It's cute how young you are.
We should take a poll. Like, how old is our audience? I'd love to know.
But that's the thing. I was thinking.
Let us
I was
know.
Thinking some of the younger people, some younger listeners, probably all the different things we've talked about are going, what? What is that?
Yeah.
What's an iPod?
Yeah. And briefly, I had just sort of dipped my toe in the water on albums, record 33s, LPs,
33 RPMs. That's why they're
you
called
haven't heard
33s.
Of that either.
Yeah. Do you know what an RPM
why
is?
Why can't you just say album? Like, I don't. Well, no one knows what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, you can. I mean, okay. It was when an album was actually an album.
Vinyl.
It meant something.
Vinyl. Yeah. Right. I know that. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Vinyl. There you go.
Okay. This we'll stop good. Having the old guys team up on the youngster. Right. It's not very nice.
But for what me, do you know,
Jonathan, I think that music influenced me in a different way than it did you, or maybe a parallel way. For me, it was an emotional outlet. And so I identified with the artists I listened to. I identified with
the
lyrics.
The artists.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think music is a personal thing. And we'll talk about that that's more here in a little bit.
Well, see, that's a great question, too, to see if that is true today.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I think in earlier generations with music, you were much more closely tied to the musician themselves.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we're going to circle back to that because I have a lot to say on that. But the interesting thing is I got a guitar when I was 18, which was too late. I had already missed the years that I had to actually practice guitars. And I've always dabbled in music. And it really is dabbling, more gear than talent by a long stretch. But now my 17-year-old son, during COVID, he latched onto all of my gear, and he had time and he had years. And now he's an incredible musician and is probably going to pursue a career somewhere in the music industry, whether that's as a performer or, you know, on the technical side. And I would say then, you know, we begin to see even the intergenerational influence, because had I not had all those instruments sitting in the basement, he wouldn't have picked them up. So, and I have mixed feelings about that. There are times I'm like, oh, it's fantastic. And other times I'm like, oh, I'm not crazy about some of the stuff he listens to. So anyway, longest icebreaker in history. Let's now have our real talk. I love hearing your stories because I think that they really show the pervasiveness of entertainment.
Right.
And there are threads of how we were influenced, how we were drawn into it. So they're similar but different. And that's kind of the theme today, is how does entertainment shape us differently? How do different forms of entertainment shape us differently? So as parents and grandparents, I think we often start off our well-intentioned admonitions to our kids with some version of, when I was your age. I think that what we're trying to do when we say that, whether we realize it or not, is we're trying to establish credibility with them. You know, we're trying to say we actually have something to speak into your life. But the truth is the age gap between the adults and adolescents is pretty big. And in some ways, I wonder if that gap is bigger today than it's ever been. What would you say is different for kids growing up today in terms of entertainment media? But what would you say remains similar to the experiences that we've shared?
I think I just imagine myself back in high school, and I did not have a phone. I don't think I had a phone until I was like 17. I had to pay for it myself, and it was like a flip phone. So like internet access was not a thing, or I was paying for it, right? Because I used to get panicked when the internet would pop up. Like, oh, I have to pay for that.
Right.
So anyway, I think the fact that you have, and this of course would be a phone thing, or maybe even kids that have laptops or wherever, but the immediate access to technology where you can see absolutely anything, hear absolutely anything, it's so widespread. Whereas before, I think in high school, if someone, and I think this is true now because this is like a TikTok thing, like if you hear something on TikTok and there's a trend, people are following it, that's probably a similarity. It kind of is widespread. But I think you have so much more so many more options now that kids can look and see all of these things and really have probably more of a niche than they even did back then, right?
Mm-hmm. And which so, in some ways makes our job as parents even harder.
Right.
I would agree with that, yeah. And I think back then you have these like few options. It felt more of like this communal experience. When someone heard about something, it was this togetherness.
Right.
And really that's not the case now, I don't think.
Yep.
I would agree. And just launching off from there, I think I was talking about the three networks and how things have really expanded now, where you've got thousands of options to stream at any time.
And what kid is watching any of those networks for anything?
Right. They're not.
And if they're even watching TV at all.
And the fact is that everyone who's creating all these thousands of different options, they're not thinking about, you know, bigger picture things.
Nope.
They, like you were saying, they're marketing everything to a niche, down to some little small
group. You have to, though.
Because,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. They're doing that because they know, I'm not going to get a huge share of stuff. I need to get my group of people that are going to support me, and that's how we'll make our money.
Yeah.
Yep.
But there's a advantage to that.
Sure.
In that you can find things that you really like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're sort of tailored to what your specific interests are. But on the other hand, there's also a negative in that you don't often get the wider picture.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just nailed into that very, very narrow view, and that can be negative.
Yeah. Mm.
It's so weird comparing today to yesterday, so to speak, because you think of kids growing up in the 80s, like myself as a teenager, 90s, the kids I remember working with back in the 90s. It was so different because, like, Kristen, it resonated with me when you said, when I got my first iPod, oh, that, you know, you had that device you could bring into your room. And it was, and the closest thing that was to probably Adam and I was a Walkman. You know, it was, as a matter of fact, my kids would tease me because they had iPods and I would be like, hey, grab your Walkmans. And he'd be like, Dad, it's not a Walkman. It's an iPod, you know, but it's interesting because when you look at the devices today, it's so much more. What you had was a device that you could have entertainment kind of at your fingertips very quickly by hitting a button. We're a little different than Adam and I, who had to fast forward or maybe listen to the whole album, you know.
Well, we had to go to the store and buy the physical media first.
Yes,
things down immensely.
Streaming is much different than going and buying it and deciding whether the clerk is even going to give it to us because there was a warning label on it. Where, you know, so that changed. But the other thing that just changed is, I mean, the device today is not just a entertainment hub. It's a social media hub.
Yeah.
And it'd be so interesting going in the 80s and trying to explain that. You'd be kind of like, okay, you know that feeling when you walk into school and you're trying to wear the right clothes and you're looking around and people are looking at you and or you know that feeling when you're browsing through, you know, that magazine, looking at the newest fashion and you're like, what is Tom Cruise wearing? Or what is, you know, what is Rob Lowe wearing? You know, whoever was popular at the time as a young lad, you know? And as you're sitting there doing that, I mean, that was a magazine, that was in person. Mm-hmm. And then communication with friends was, I know Adam probably has memories of this, in your house on a landline with the, you know, little spiral cord stretched across the house, and in your
as
mom
far from my
up,
parents as I could get.
Exactly. And in your mom picking up the line and you're like, Mom, I'm on the phone. Well,
mom,
get off the phone. I need to use it. You know,
I can hear
finally,
you breathing.
Yeah. And you would absolutely, I mean, it was this funny thing because there was this one phone in the house and then call waiting came. So you're like, well, Mom, if grandma calls, it's okay because there's call waiting. I can go. So, I mean, these were like the issues of the day back then.
Yeah.
And you were trying to communicate with friends. You wanted to be with them on the phone or in person. And when you did, you were definitely trying to measure up. But that's just like nothing compared to today, the access that kids have 24/7, especially when you got 8 out of 10, you know, kids bringing their devices into their bedroom at night. They're facing these pressures all night long, where at least Adam and I were able to kind of escape those pressures when we came home. Many of us were able to go to a safe place.
Yeah, and I just put Def Leppard on and rewound it over and over and over and until the lyrics were gone.
And by the way, we might want to mention, just as a side note, warning labels on music were a good thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, they were.
They
yeah.
actually kind of told us stuff. But yeah. You're right. The playing the Def Leppard, that was kind of the influence back then, because your influence with friends was who you physically drove over, you rode your little bike or drove over to their house and hung out with, where now
we
you
literally
have these voices
Stranger
speaking
Things
to you
every day.
Yeah. That's the only way to explain it. So it's a different world.
Yeah.
I think too, and Jonathan, something you said triggered this thought. When I was younger, one, I was homeschooled. So this is like a different, it's different than going to public school. And we lived on all this land and had all this space, right? And I was born in 91, and so I didn't have really a lot of technology as a kid, like at all, like maybe a couple channels. I mean, I only remember watching PBS.
Yeah.
And then as I got into high school, even still, you know, you don't have that direct access to the internet until late college for me. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, just the, like you were saying, Jonathan, this influence on younger children to have all of these things. We had it, but I feel like it was a different dose.
Yeah, you know? It was. And even early on with the internet, you still were on a pay model. You know, I mean, remembering the days.
Praise God, it's over.
You had to pay 99 cents on iTunes to, you know, to download a track. Nobody does that anymore. It's all streamed.
That's right.
And, you know, and even that.
And you don't even
since the early 2000s, it's totally different.
You don't even think you're paying for it, but you are.
You are.
That's a great point.
That is well said.
Well, we're not the only ones paying attention to change, to trends, to influence. I thought it would be interesting to just talk briefly about what social scientists and those who study these things have to say about, you know, what is the most influential screen and entertainment options for kids today? What do we know about that?
I'm happy to chime in there. I mean, it's something we've talked about on the show before, but it is fascinating to me that, you know, for the first, I'd say, decade or so, that devices were getting in young people's pockets from the pre-iPhone days where you had the iPods,
right,
the video iPods, and all of a sudden to, you know, 2007, the release of the iPhone, 2012 is when America crossed the 50% yep. mark for having a smartphone in their back pocket. And that happened with young people as well. So all of a sudden in 2012, we saw this huge change. By the way, that's the year Snapchat came out. That's the year Instagram became a thing. This literally became this massive switch where communication all of a sudden now came to these devices where you could be on social media in your pocket. And the question you just asked is, what is everybody saying about it? For a decade, literally, people were like, you know, how's this affecting young people? How is all this movies in their pocket? How is all this music in their pockets? And it wasn't until about 2020-ish that really there was kind of a consensus of, hey, you know, we could talk about video games, we could talk about movies, we could talk about music, but let's talk about the thing that's really affecting the self-esteem of young people. Let's talk about social media. Yeah. And that's the one thing everybody pretty much agrees on. And we could cite some studies like the one that Dr. Gene Twenge and Jonathan Haidt did in 2020, where they pretty much took a bunch of researchers and said, what do we all agree on? And they agreed on two things. Mental health is getting worse. And it really comes down to social media, especially with young girls. And so that's what everybody's agreeing on. And since then, legislation is changing. Lawsuits are starting to happen where, hey, our kids are all depressed. Big tech is just handing these, you know, devices to our kids. Well, really, it's parents that are doing that. And we all are kind of, you know, sitting there scratching our heads, still trying to figure this out. But I tell you, social media is the focus of my attention.
Okay.
Because as much as music and entertainment, all this other stuff sure has effects, the thing that, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the, when it comes to driving, drunk driving would be my focus, you know, the alcohol and cars and all that. I want to focus on what's killing the most kids, and the device in their pocket, social media is having the biggest effect.
Yeah. I'm interested in what you guys are saying, but I was thinking about my sister who is what, 18, almost 18, I think. Mm-hmm.
And are you asking us?
I'm asking, do you know how old my sister is? I've seen a lot of YouTube, Snapchat, and streaming on like Netflix or something like that. Those are like the three prevailing, outlets, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you have
forms
young daughters. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Well, and see, that is a very interesting point. I mean, both you and Jonathan, focusing in on social media, I think we used to think of social media as the main way that people communicated.
Right.
You know, that this was the new world where we all communicate online.
Right.
But the fact is, I think that's really shifting.
I agree.
And I think the studies tend to show that. I mean, we were talking at one point about the Common Sense Media.
Yeah.
Census.
The census, which is 2021, I believe.
Yeah.
They do it every 2 or 3 years.
And one of the numbers that really stood out to me on that census was when it was talking about online videos.
Mm.
And because the largest increase between 2019 and 2021 were how many videos that kids were watching online.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, from 61% up to 77%. It was a huge leap. And I think that's where social media is going.
Yeah.
We need to, you know, understand that social media isn't Facebook anymore. Facebook is dead, pretty much. Right. I mean, everybody's leaving Facebook.
Certainly for younger people.
Except for the older crew are still on Facebook. But the younger people, like you were saying, are all going to those quick little videos. It's sort of their entertainment choice.
Where it is, yeah.
These little short bits where that you don't have to concentrate much, you don't have to actually think, you just absorb these little fast little videos. And what it's created is short attention spans and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Well, the short attention span thing, honestly, I think affects me too, because I would be interested to see how long movies last in this next generation. I really mean that because it's a dedication. For some reason, and I think Paul has mentioned this before in getting into the characters and diving into them, there's a different commitment with a show and a movie.
Yep.
And when I watch a show, I can stream that for like three movies long.
Yeah.
And it doesn't faze me. But to sit down and watch a movie, it's almost like painful. I'm like, ugh. And there's something about, I mean, even being in a collective room where people are like scrolling on their phones while this thing is on, even with TV.
Yeah.
Because
interesting.
To Hoos's point, this isn't just like, oh, I'm going to get on here and message my friend. This is like, this is my whole world of entertainment and all the options are here.
Well, I even think about commercials, which is a little bit of a sideways turn here. The other night I was watching and a Honda commercial came on. Sorry, we're not endorsing Honda, but that's what it was. and I just started counting the cuts during the commercial. And I almost could not count fast enough.
Yeah, rapid
and in
fire.
A 30-second commercial, I got to north of 100. And it didn't used to be that way. And so not only are we dealing with short form video, we're dealing with these rapid cuts. Jonathan?
Well, and the other thing, you know, we're talking about short attention spans, but the other thing that social media in our pockets is affecting is the rise of the influencer.
Right.
Because as we're seeing so many young people, you know, looking at these TikTok videos, looking at YouTube, looking at these shorts, many young people are going, I want to do that.
Yep.
And it's nothing new because Kristen, Bob, and Adam and I could talk about how in the 80s, how we all wanted to be, you know, rock stars and our sisters wanted to
still
be Madonna
do.
And, you know, and whatever, you know, and because that was what was, those were the influencers of the day. Mm-hmm. Well, now the influencers of the day is somebody who's making funny TikTok videos. So it's very natural for us to understand why some studies have showed 7 or 8 out of 10 young people want to be an influencer in some way, because forget being a nurse, forget being an electrician. I want to just make funny videos all day. That would be hilarious. So we're seeing that as well as a byproduct of watching all these short little videos.
That's why I think we have to be super diligent as parents, because something that you said in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s,
blah, blah,
before.
Blah.
No. I mean, sorry.
Ancient days.
Back then, as I was growing up, if somebody was influencing me, oftentimes it was more collective. People knew about who was influencing.
Right.
Because it's such a wide market, the influencers are very niche, which means that you can have this influencer doing something very specific in their very own way. And that's not always positive.
Right. And oftentimes it's not positive. And I think the other thing that is happening with short form video, with, you know, TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and they all have short form video options. And functionally, okay, so maybe the functions are a little bit different. They're all the same. They do exactly the same thing. It's blurring the lines between social media, where it came from, which is I'm going to share my life and information.
Right.
But now everybody's making videos. They're wanting to tell stories. And so I think in a very real way, it's kind of turned an entire generation into storytellers and story consumers, but on this micro level.
And like, they're very different groups.
And so, you know, I watch, I'm on Instagram. I know it's crazy, but I am.
I didn't know that.
And TikTok. And you watch.
You're on TikTok?
I'm not on it as a content producer. Okay. I'm on it as somebody who, you know.
Consumes media.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
Okay, there we go. Gotcha.
And there's this weird blurring of the lines in every way. And I think even thinking about influencers, and this is short personal story, and you're going to laugh. My brother, who is infinitely cooler than me and kept all his hair, and I'm still working through that. He's 10 years younger than me, and he's always been very savvy with all kinds of things. And he just started a YouTube channel, and he's a gun enthusiast. And his YouTube channel is all about his guns that he's bought and demos and safety videos and all sorts of things. It is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what it made me do? It made me think,
Can I
want to start a YouTube channel about the things. I mean, and so that's how influence works, right? Even for those of us who haven't been kids for a minute, we can still be sort of swept into this notion of it would be kind of cool to be internet famous.
Until you start doing it and then realize,
yeah, it's a lot
I've got to keep doing this.
Right,
it's forever. A lot of pressure.
Okay, so we have talked a lot about some of the specific ways that social media influences us. And I think especially with short form video, one of the influences is just obliterating our attention span and turning us into dopamine slaves, right?
Yeah, right.
You never watch one Instagram or TikTok video. Never.
It is that constant scroll and those little dopamine hits.
Right. And the cats with the captions talking to each other. And it's remarkable how you know what I'm talking about.
They're like, just
you
really get on, weird niches, but go ahead.
They're very strange, right? You never spend 2 minutes on one. It's 15, 20, 30, 40. And you never get done with that time and think, well, that was time invested well. It's totally cotton candy.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I think it's totally worth it, but go ahead.
And sometimes we just need to laugh. Anyway, I want to move on and just talk fairly briefly, because we've already had a fairly extensive conversation, about some of the ways that the other forms of entertainment that we've mentioned influence us in specific ways. Bob, talk to us about, as our video game guy, and Jonathan, I know you're very knowledgeable too, how do video games influence kids and players in a very specific way, perhaps differently than other media?
Well, and I think video games are very different. They're definitely different from the social media things that we were talking about. And they're also very different from TV and movies.
For sure.
I mean, when you think about it, when you, like in the course of a year, you'll watch maybe 100 movies, you'll watch thousands of TV shows. And and what they do is they, bit by bit, it's like a frog in the pot, you know, where you slowly turn up the heat. They bit by bit can shift your point of view.
Yeah.
If you consume enough of it.
Yeah.
Video games are different because video games don't naturally slowly shift things. Video games just sort of immerse you. They pull you in. They're designed with these little reward systems to keep pulling you in. So you stay there for 10, 20 hours. You just don't leave. You're immersed in this world. And so that can influence your viewpoint just because you're there for all that time. But here's the thing. Here's the big difference, in my opinion. More and more video games these days are adding choices. Mm-hmm. And I mean, You choose, I mean, like you'll have maybe three different choices. You choose A, B, or C in your dialogue interactions. You can choose to do the right thing or a good thing or a negative thing. And those influence the story. They shape the story. And in a way, I think that's actually a positive thing. Because
you see consequences.
Exactly. You see consequences. And if you go back for a replay and choose a different direction, like say you play the good guy through the first time through, and the next time you say, okay, I'm going to play the bad guy this time.
I'm going to be Darth Vader this
time. I'm
going to
be the dark character and see that how that reshapes the story, you know? And it gives you a contrast. It gives you an A-B contrast so you actually see how bad choices can result in bad results, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of positives with video games. I'm not against video games. Parents always ask me, should I be concerned? And I always like to say, well, tell me why you're asking. And it usually is followed up with a story of one of their kids, usually their son, usually young, who is socially not, you know, venturing out of the house much, who's spending too much time in front of that screen, who mom and dad are finding, and now he's kind of lying and manipulating and doing anything to keep playing more. So the thing that's hard about it is video games, I think, can be positive, like you say, with so many things, in moderation. I dare say, compare it to, like, you know, I think a lot of people would say, hey, a glass of wine could be really great, but if you're drinking a bottle a night, it could be a problem.
Right.
The thing is, with video games, I honestly have a threefold concern. One is lack of exercise. If kids are spending so much time in front of video games, sometimes they aren't as engaged in other physical activities.
Yeah.
That's not, of course, I know there's parents out there saying, my son's on the football team, but he also loves video games. That's great. I'm glad your son's outside exercising. There's a lot of kids who aren't. And then the from there, the other thing is the lack of socialization, because a lot of kids find that they just prefer to just sit there and just them and the game, and that's their socialization, which leads to my third point that concerns me, which is the socialization they do have is that now video games, most of them, you're connecting to a bunch of strangers and playing with a bunch of strangers, and sadly, there's a bunch of creepers out there. Hmm. And so that's my third concern is that, you know, you're now in this actually social media world in a way where you're kind of talking with all these people that you just met. And a lot of young people are playing games with guys that just, I mean, most parents wouldn't drop their kid off at 2 a.m. in the wrong part of town to engage with some
with this
creepy 50 people.
Year old guy in the basement.
Yeah. But that's what a lot of parents are doing when they allow their kids to just be on, you know, video games on the chat there, or, you know, using other apps that we all know have emerged where if the chat is locked on a video game, just simply go to, you know, this to Discord
to,
or wherever.
Go to Discord.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, and I think that one of the distinctions I want to make with video games is video games are a form of very actively engaged entertainment, whereas watching a movie or a TV show,
right,
in some ways it's fundamentally passive. Mm-hmm. A video game, you are actively engaged, and depending on what the content is, like you were saying, Bob, it can be good or bad, you know,
yeah,
but it's a different form of engagement. And the other thing I wanted to point out, and one of the issues is that especially for boys, if boys are having problems with school, if they aren't fitting in, and boys have problems, right? Video games allow a place for them to be successful. And you use the word rewards, Bob.
Right.
And in his book, Boys Adrift, Leonard Sachs talks about how one of the issues with video games is they get used to succeeding there, and, you know, that just one more level. You know, I just want to level up. But leveling up in a video game, even if it's a challenging video game, is still going to be harder than leveling up in real life. And so it becomes potentially an escape where they can have a counterfeit form of success, but it can potentially make engagement in the real world, which is messier, it can make it harder. And I'm not anti-video games, but I have seen this even with my own son that it's more fun to level up and play Fortnite all night than it is to try to battle his way through a calculus class.
So first of all, my oldest is 6, okay? And I don't have a lot of like life experience when it comes to my kids and video games. But my husband doesn't really play them that often either. And so our rule right now is we don't do it during the week. During the weekend, he can have an hour. That's our cutoff. But I thought what you said was really interesting about success and leveling up and how that's difficult in real life. I think one way you can see this, and I think this is maybe just parents be mindful of this, is that, you know, after video games and after you graduate is real life, you know, you get married, you have a family, you establish your life together. And if real life gets dull or boring, and it often can, or difficult or frustrating, and you want that escape, and I'm not saying that women aren't guilty of this, but you often see wives complaining, you know, like, my husband is on the game for hours and hours and hours.
Right. And if the analog is out there, perhaps it's, and I'm stereotyping, it might be romance novels or Hallmark movies.
100%. Right? Whatever that escape is, us learning to be very present in real world. And when you have all of these alternatives, it makes it less desirable because we don't know how to function. You know, there are people that really don't know how to function in the thick of this.
Exactly. And that's why in all of this, you have to think about moderation and you have to think about pacing yourself and have to think about being cognitively aware of everything that's going on that you're involved in. I mean, because for every positive, we can come up with a negative.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And every negative, we can come up with a positive.
Sure.
I mean, the whole thing about being sucked into this world of positive rewards, it's also rewarding because you're solving problems.
Sure.
It really teaches you how to solve problems, but you can't go to any extremes.
Yeah.
You've got to balance out your time.
Well, we touched on music a little bit in our icebreaker question. And I think I want to just circle back and say, I think the unique way that music influences is that there's that sense of personal identification. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if music is your jam, you're listening to some of those songs thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Whereas, you know, I often say, you know, I got to get Star Wars in here. Maybe I've seen Star Wars 300 times in my life. I don't know. Maybe it's more. Maybe it's a lot, right? But that's nothing in comparison to the number of times I rewound my cassette tape and listened to Living on a Prayer
sure.
in 1986 and pretty much yeah. every year since then, right? I mean, it's just, so the influence there is personal, and it's that repeated exposure to whatever the ideas are. And I think that functions differently.
That can program you subconsciously.
Yeah. Well, and you identify with whatever those messages are.
Right.
You know, and I've mentioned it before, but I think of Whitesnake's song, "Here I Go Again on My Own, Going Down the Only Road I've Ever Known. Like a drifter, I was born to walk alone." When I was 17, that reinforced the idea that I was alone, that I was a loner. And I found myself drawn to those sorts of messages. And rock and roll, whatever else it may be, has often been a soundtrack of alienation. Mm. And some kids really identify with that. I want to move on, and I want to lump TV and movies in together because we've already had a fairly long conversation. But how do those things influence us and influence kids?
Well, like I said earlier, in a way, they're their own boiling pot
yeah.
that slowly influence you in a certain direction. And let's face it, most of these things are coming out of Hollywood, and Hollywood tends to have fairly liberal morals.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, I think a lot of the new, especially new TV shows and movies, lean toward a more liberal moral viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And as you watch it over and over and over, you were talking about music, hearing yeah. something over and over and over, even the language that's in your ear, and then your own personal language changes. It's the same thing when you're watching these shows, and they have a specific kind of moral code that is pushing you in that direction. And the more you're sitting in it, the more you're viewing it, the more you start identifying with it, yeah. and it can change you in negative ways, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
I think it's about being normalized. Like, you get to see yeah. something on screen that is now normalized. And to your point,
right.
we have a lot of like LGBTQ themes, yeah. right, that are being normalized, even in kids programming at TVY, which you need to watch out for now. But even, and I'll talk about the positive too in a second, but even with adult content, like, a lot of stuff is TVMA right now. And yeah. so it's like you're paying to stream porn, really. I mean, that's kind of where this stuff is extremely intense. It's not just like softcore or like a romantic novel anymore. Like, it's extremely intense.
Like a show like Euphoria, for example.
Euphoria, oh, Game of Thrones, Bridgerton.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff is like, it's intense. And in the same way, to your point, Hoos, it's what you're deciding to put on repeat, because there's a ton of positive too, a ton of things that have moral messages that you could choose. And it's really what you want to normalize in your home.
Okay. You know, I think that we could probably say more about that, but I know that we yeah. have already had a fairly long conversation here. And I hope that as we have talked about this today, that we've differentiated this idea of screen time. Mm-hmm. You know, we sometimes use that word as a shorthand for engaging in an unhealthy way. But the fact is that our screens, our devices, enable us to connect with all sorts of different kinds of entertainment. And especially with our kids, I think it's important to really know your kids, right? To see exactly. what they are drawn to understand the influence and the attraction, and to be engaged. Maybe they're into TikTok, maybe they're into music. I mean, there are a lot of different things that we've talked about here today, but be a student of your kids and be thinking through, how do I create boundaries to protect them, and how do I engage in their world so that we can have an ongoing conversation? Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
You bet.
Well, today we have the privilege of talking with Rebecca St. James. I'm excited to talk to you
Thank
today.
Thank you.
Thanks
I'm
so
thrilled.
Much for coming on the Plugged In Show.
My pleasure.
We have a lot of ground that we could potentially cover, right?
Good.
There's a lot to say. Some of you listening today are of a certain tender age that you will remember when Rebecca really exploded onto the scene in 1994. And I remember when you came around, because I have a brother and sister who are 9 and 10 years younger than me.
Mm.
And they were probably bigger fans than I was, mm-hmm. but I think I had your first couple albums well. And, you know, since then, you have enjoyed a remarkable music career, and that's broadened into, I don't know, you're sort of a Renaissance woman, right?
Thank you.
You've done acting, you've done writing, you've got podcasts now, you're married, you have kids, and you're talking about parenting. And in fact, you're the co-host with Dr. Danny Huerta on a Focus podcast, Practice Makes Parent. And of course, I mean, I have annoying younger siblings, and you do too, right? I mean, you've got several of those, and Joel and Luke Smallbone, people may be familiar with
For King and
For
Country,
King and Country, yeah. Even if they're less familiar with your career. So that's the biographical setup.
You did really good. That is there was anything, very concise. Well
anything
done.
I've missed
no,
that people
I think
need
you're
to know
good.
About?
You hit the high notes.
All right. Yeah. Well, I thought a great place to start our conversation today, especially since we're talking about you and your family, is a new movie that's coming out that's going to tell your story. It's called Unsung Hero, and it lands in theaters April 26th. So.
That's right.
What's the story with Unsung Hero, Rebecca?
Well, it is a story that I've told since I was 16, really, and started full-time in music. But my family and I moved to the U.S. in 91 when I was 14 because of my dad's job. And then about 2 months after we moved, he lost that job. And so we were left really on the other side of the world with just no income. Six kids in the family at that point, my mom pregnant with my sister.
Wow.
And we lived by faith, really, for like at least 2 years and just saw God do miracles. We'd pray for a car. We'd pray for food, money to survive. We had no furniture in our house. We were sleeping on the floor. And there's a scene in the movie where you see my mom wrapping sheets around clothes, winter clothes, because that was our mattress at that point.
Wow.
And she called
where
them
were you
adventure
living at that
beds.
Point?
We were living in Nashville, in Brentwood, just outside Nashville. So it's kind of a remarkable story about marriage, like my parents' marriage. My mom is the unsung hero. And family, about prayer, about faith. And through it also, what God was doing in kind of my ministry and kind of leading me into music. The last scene of the movie is me at a festival performing. So there's a lot there, and the response has just been really, really sweet to see. Powerful response.
Okay. Well, and whose idea was it to say, hey, this is an incredible story. We love our story, but maybe others will be blessed by our story too. How has the movie actually sort of come to be?
Yeah, I mean, a ton of people have said over the years that you guys should write a book, do a movie. I mean, there's a lot here. But my mom wrote a book a couple years ago called Behind the Lights, and I think that was a step towards the movie. And then my brothers, Joel and Luke, had really sensed that there was a movie with our story as well and felt the timing was right. So they went to Kingdom Pictures, who did Jesus Revolution, and I Can Only Imagine.
Yeah, the Irwin brothers.
Who also have a partnership with Lionsgate, who's putting out the film. So it just, the timing was right, and just God put the team together. But we're really excited to see what he does with it, because it is a story that I think can encourage families, marriages, individuals in a time of discouragement, you know, in those areas. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to ask, I've never asked anybody this before.
Oh, wow. Fresh question.
What is it like to have somebody play your life on screen? Is it cool? Is it super weird?
It's wild.
Like, I would love to hear about that experience.
I mean, it really is. It was a profound thing. And I realized that very few people on the planet ever get to have that experience of seeing someone play yourself. Thankfully, I had my brother directing. Joel was starring as my dad and then also directs. My husband, Cubby, also helped direct. Like, he was involved as a producer as well. Very hands-on. So I had kind of people speaking into every aspect of the film that knew me very well. But I remember the scene, the final scene of the movie is this festival, Creation Festival in the 90s. And it's me kind of like doing a show and, you know, in front of this bigger crowd. And so I was on one side of the stage in real life watching my younger self, my 16-year-old. Seriously, and she looks so much like me. Like, she even holds her mouth in the same way I do. I mean, it's wild. So she's over there on the other side of the stage with my mom. They're filming this moment, this kind of sacred moment where I tell my mom, like, you're my hero. It's like, I want to be like you. I want, you know. And so it's this kind of sacred moment. I'm
crying because I'm like watching this thing play out, and I'm remembering all these times where I prayed with my mom before I would go out on stage because I felt so inadequate being so young and doing all that I was doing. And so praying with her before going out was like such a comfort to me. My mom is standing behind me in real life. And I turned to her with tears in my eyes
Is she crying too?
I think she was a little teary as well. But I just say, Mom, this happened. Like, how wild is this? This happened so many, countless amount of times that we were living this out. And how wild is this? So it's a beautiful experience. It was really powerful for me.
So if somebody is not necessarily familiar with your family story, and obviously between you and your brothers, there are multiple entry points for fans who probably have some awareness. But what do you hope people take away from the movie? And you touched on it a little bit, but I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. It hit me that the word encourage holds the word courage in it just recently. And I feel like in my ministry, I feel like I'm called to encourage people, in faith, to encourage people in the areas of family, which is why I'm doing this podcast with Focus on the Family. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the film achieves that as well. People are very moved by these themes of parent-child relationship. You know, the dynamic between my dad and I is very prominent. This dynamic of spouses going through hard times together and clinging to God and each other. Struggling through crisis, as major crisis that our family, I mean, we were living in poverty in essence for, you know, a while, but just seeing God show up for us. And so I hope people walk away with the courage to stand firm, and I'm getting goosebumps as I talk about it, to stand firm in faith, to stand firm in marriage, if you're married, and to stand firm in commitment to family. At the end of the film, a Mother Teresa quote comes up that says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And I just think that that's a huge takeaway because it is honoring to God. When we love our families well, when we're inspired by the Holy Spirit to love well within our families, we do change the world.
I love that. And I think, you know, we live in a world with so many competing narratives and competing stories. And frankly, without being cynical, but being, you know, realistic, a lot of lies.
Yeah,
and so I hope as your story and your family story comes out that people do find those connecting points, and find that encouragement, because we're so hungry for stories that are based on truth.
100%. So, we need them. We need them.
So I want to pivot just a little bit into sort of a bigger conversation about entertainment and celebrity culture and our kids growing up in it today.
Yes.
I think that you have a remarkable perspective because you lived through something like that. And the interesting thing is, you know, back in the day, you know, meaning before the internet, if you wanted to be famous, like if you had the itch to be an actor or a singer, well, there were three places you go. You go to New York, you go to Los Angeles, you go to Nashville, right? Mm. You had to go. And then, you know, the old pay your dues and that whole thing.
Yeah.
Then the internet comes along, right? And, you know, people like Justin Bieber trailblaze this entirely new paradigm of anybody can be famous. You can be famous in your basement. I can be maybe not a performer, but I can be a social media influencer. And so now when we pull kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, we hear that, right? I want to be internet famous. I want to be a social media person. And so I'm really interested with that in mind. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on guiding and directing teens and tweens who have fallen in love with or become infatuated with the idea of pursuing online fame, especially given where you've come from. What would you say to them?
I would say just in my experience, it's not as glamorous as it looks, for one. And it's a minefield, really. You've got to be really careful how you navigate it, because I think it's easy to lose your own soul in all of that. I was blessed in that I grew up around music. And so, I mean, I went to my first concert when I was 6 weeks old. And my dad was a Christian concert promoter, so he'd bring Amy Grant and White Hart and all these bands from Petra, all these bands, Striper, to Australia and tour them around. So I grew up around it. So I think I knew I knew that it wasn't as easy as it looks. I kind of saw that life of like, it's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of being away from normal life and friends and family. So when I went into it, I think I went in a little bit with my eyes open. But then when you live it out, there is a loneliness and a cost and a toll of kind of being in the spotlight a lot that I experienced. I also saw my husband being in a very popular pop band, Foster the People. Mm-hmm. He's one of the founding members
of
that band.
He's the bass player.
That's right. So I toured the world with him when we were first married. And so I saw that as well. And yes, there is some really amazing moments where you're seeing the crowd just like, you know, be ecstatic singing, you know, their song or back in the day, my songs, you know, word for word. I mean, there's a joy to it. And then seeing people's lives being changed too. Like I got to see that through my music. But there is a toll that it takes on a person because only God was built for glory, right? Yeah. Only, I mean, not built. He is glory. He deserves the glory. He has and always has been the only person that can handle glory. Whereas we, I think in our humanity, want to be these little mini gods, right? Like I mean, it's what Lucifer did. He wanted to be like God. And so I think we've got to be so careful and probably speak to our kids about the trap of that. And I even look at some of the most kind of famous people in the world. And probably because of my experience, I feel sorry for them because there's an isolation. No matter where they go, they're kind of known and put up on this pedestal. And there's a loneliness to that people just have to understand is a factor. And so I would encourage people to be really careful about that and really put your focus on, God, what are you wanting me to do with my life? Mm. Where do you know I will flourish? Where do you know is the right dreams for me? And I trust you to take care of me as I seek to follow you.
I love that. And kind of a follow-up question. We talk a lot at Plugged In and we talk a lot in our culture. We talk about screen time. We talk about social media. We talk about
Very
TikTok
important.
And dopamine. Yep. Hugely important. And I think that one of the things that can happen is, and this is, I want you to just, I'm going to toss an opinion out and you can react to it. I wonder, have we forgotten how influential music continues to be? Like, I think it's still with all of the focus on this, is music, do you think, still the influential
standalone without the visuals?
This
is what you're saying.
Yeah,
you know what, I was thinking about that because I was doing a podcast earlier today actually about media and we were talking about this particular issue, and I was thinking, growing up, when we were in the car on long trips, we didn't have screens, right? To distract ourselves from boredom. Oh, the terrible thing of boredom, right? We didn't have that. And so we had to
I don't have 5G.
No, I know. Where's my signal? I'm panicked. So we had to get creative. We sang. We had conversations. We had to play games. I say had to. Like, it was so good for our developing brains. It was so good for our creativity. And I even attribute a lot of the creativity within our family from those times in the car where we had to get creative. But we also did have music.
Yeah.
So I think we had that in the car. And it took you to this other place that was a place of joy and wonder and creativity. And it was just that sonic world that you could enter. And I mean, you're the expert. You've done the research. That is better for your brain, right? Yeah. Than being overwhelmed by a screen that's sound and visuals.
Yeah.
And so I think there needs to be a trend back to that. I love what you're talking about.
Well, and I just think that we can lose track of the fact that music continues to exert tremendous influence, hopefully for good, but also potentially for ill, depending on what the worldview and the messages are.
True.
So I was just curious what, you know, your perspective that was like.
Yeah, it's a powerful force, as you said, for good or for evil. And so we've got to be careful about not only what we're listening to, but what our kids are listening to as well.
So we talked about the kids growing up with the allure of internet celebrity. I want to turn it the other way. If you are a parent and you have a child that is precocious, maybe they're a singer, maybe they're a dancer, they're interested in creative performing arts of some kind, what would you say in terms of guiding and shepherding those little hearts?
Whew, that is a really big question, because it hits me right at my maternal core, because I have three kids that are all quite naturally creative and probably gifted in the arts. And, you know, I think if you had have asked me before having kids what I would have said to my kids about exploring music or performance of any kind or acting or any modeling, any of that kind of world, I would have said, run for the hills, you know. Yeah.
Why would you have said that? Can I interrupt you?
Because out of fear, yeah. Out of fear and out of probably what I've seen personally of yeah. how it has, you know, knocked so many people that I know around. And even my own heart has felt really battered at certain points, you know, by that platform and just how much it takes out of you emotionally yeah. and mentally and spiritually even. So, but, you know, I feel like I've come to a new like place of healing and kind of freedom and joy about all of that and have fresh eyes to see it. And so I think my philosophy is if God is calling them to a form of ministry in art, then we are to encourage them, but also have our cautious, mm-hmm. Holy Spirit-led discernment eyes to see the dangers. I think starting too young can be really, really damaging and scary for kids.
Well, and parents may need to have a conscience check of their own. Am I really doing this for my kid, or is this about me?
You know,
100%. I mean, how many crazy stage manager parents are out there living vicariously through their kids, right?
100%.
A lot of them.
A lot, yes. So I think a lot of wisdom is needed, and just having that, like, that verse in mind, guard your heart, for out of it flow the wellsprings of life. Like, we've got to guard our children's hearts. And because I think in the arts and any kind of it, it can become very much about like power and money and fame and appearance and all these outer things that are just a trap. Like, they're a trap for any of us, but right. then they can especially be a trap for people in the arts. So I would just say prayerfully go about it with wisdom, and we'll be in that with you probably with our own kids.
I love that. Well, as we wrap up today, anything else you'd like to say to our plugged in audience just on these broad topics that we've been touching on today?
I would just encourage people listening just to hope in Jesus. I know it sounds so simple, but we live in a very jaded, discouraged, hurting world. And if there's anything that I know, you know, now having lived decades of life in, you know, and lived a great adventure with Jesus, I really have. I've lived highs and lows. There's been some, you know, challenging times in my life, miscarriages and job disappointments from my husband and, you know, hurt that I've walked through in my life, even with, you know, music and all of that. But I know that Jesus and living for him is the hope, and his way, the adventure, the great adventure that you can go on with Jesus is the best way. So I just encourage people to have that that childlike trust that God has a beautiful and redemptive story for you, and just look to him at every turn and watch for him to show up redemptively in your life, because I've seen him do it in mine.
Rebecca, that is a beautiful place to stick the landing today. I thank you for that word of encouragement, and thanks for spending some time talking to the Plugged In Show today.
My pleasure. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this week we have the ever, ever talented Bob Hoos with us. And Bob, you are going to introduce us to a new segment that we will do from time to time. And Bob, what are we calling it?
I thought it would be a fun little idea to do a plugged in dad joke.
Okay.
Now, I know you're wondering what, but the idea is that we come to the table with a dad joke that relates to the things that we do in Plugged In.
Okay.
You know, movies, TV, music.
It's kind of fun.
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Here we go.
This is the dad joke right now.
Here it is. scientists have discovered that when you sing to a cow, it produces more milk. Yeah, they call it a case of in one ear and out the udder.
Oh.
Boom, boom.
I feel like Adam's really going to use these.
I feel like what we need is we really do need to add a a drum. Boom, boom.
Yeah. You know, I honestly feel like that was both the beginning and the end of the segment forever because that joke is so amazing.
It
was utterly amazing.
There you go. And we can come up with things like that. It'll be fun. And I was thinking people at home could then take them to the dinner table and say, yes, I've got a joke.
We should ask them for dad jokes. I who could it. Read
exactly,
them.
Exactly. They can mail them in.
That is our plugged in dad joke for the week. And if you have plugged in dad jokes, send them our way. Yes, send them to team@thepluggedinshow.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And of course, that's true of everything that we have talked about today. We covered a lot of ground related to our new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, talking about how different forms of entertainment influence us differently. And actually, we unpacked a lot of those ideas in one of the chapters of our book. And if you would like to find more of that kind of content today, for a gift of any amount, we would love to send you your very own copy of Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. And you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for this week's show. And, you know, and if you just have other thoughts related to our conversation today, or maybe my conversation with Rebecca St. James, we would love to hear from you. So again, shoot us an email at team@thepluggedinshow.com, or you can go to our webpage and you'll see a little black ribbon and you can leave us a voicemail, and we would love to include your voice message to us perhaps in a future episode of the show. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us this week at The Plugged In Show. We know you have lots of ways that you can spend your time. In fact, I think we talked about all of them today, right? We have lots of options, and we want to help you and your family navigate this crazy world of entertainment, pop culture, and technology. That's why we get together every week, and we look forward to getting together with you again next week on another episode of The Plugged In Show.
God wants true disciples, ones that think like Him, talk like Him, walk like Him, disciples that bring shalom to the chaos of this world. Pursue that path with the RVL Discipleship Series. Bible scholar Ray Vanderlaan will give you the tools to understand the Bible more deeply and inspire you to be a passionate follower of Christ. Watch the first episode at rvldiscipleship.com.